Hi there, everybody, and welcome to the final Max Chat of 2017. Hope everyone's fantastic and looking forward to a fun and exciting and relaxing Christmas with friends and family. Few days left, so tonight is, as I say, the last Max Chat of 2017. And the topic for this evening is seven reasons why Savvy would or wouldn't want you on his gym team. Now, just to put a bit of context around that for you, some of you may not be aware that prior to becoming one of the co-founders and owners of Max, I also owned two very, very successful health clubs in Christchurch. We had just under a fraction under 5,000 members across two locations. One of the gyms was 3,300 square meters, or approximately 33,000 square feet, and the other was 2,400 square meters, or approximately 24,000 square feet. So very large, traditional, full service gym facilities. And they were very successful, and we were fortunate enough to win the New Zealand Fitness Club of the Year, and were recognised as one of the most successful gym operations in New Zealand. And I say that based on an understanding of how we were viewed in the market by our major competitors. So tonight's session is very much about my personal experience. I wouldn't say necessarily that the reasons that I'm going to give you tonight are necessarily textbook reasons, but they are certainly reasons that I believe contributed strongly to our success. And our success was built a lot around not only good business model, great systems, and all of the other small elements, but very much around people and the people that we had on our team and the people that we didn't have on our team. And so very much tonight is about my personal experience, what I think a gym owner looks for or doesn't look for that matter, in team players. So some wisdom, if you like, based on my own personal experiences. So let's kick off with reason number one. Okay. Well, actually, that's not right. I'm going to start off where it all starts. That's right. I suppose I had lots of philosophies around people, attractment, recruitment, training and performance management, but there were sort of a few underlying rules, and I've just tried to pick out three that I sort of always adopted, and I encourage the management team that I developed to lead my business forward to have the same approach. And that was that I always started when I was looking at an individual and to come and join the team, or a group of individuals, that my starting point was always no. And that I had to find reasons why I wanted them to be part of my team, not reasons why I didn't want them to be part of my team. So the starting point was no, there's no opportunity for you. Now, I didn't articulate that openly to an individual, but that was what my mindset was. And it was the individual's job to show me and convince me that they were the right person to bring onto the team, so my no could become a yes. Rather than always, trying to justify I wanted to take yes, 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 and why I had to turn it around and say no. So that was just a fundamental, just a slightly different approach. You had to help me move from a position of saying no, I didn't want you on my team, to yes, I did. So that was sort of one of the core principles that I adopted. The second core principle was to hire slow and fire fast. And that sounds callous, or it sounds certainly the second part, fire fast. But the truth is that we couldn't afford to allow underperforming, and underperforming is by all sorts of measures, attitudinal and results and all of the other elements that make it for a successful team. We couldn't have passengers. we couldn't afford to carry people that weren't making a contribution to the business moving forward. So therefore, we did fire fast, but we fired within the realms of the law, and we had good processes around managing individuals' performance and giving them feedback and where need be, moving them on out of the organisation. But we also hired slow. We went through quite a detailed process, which I won't get into tonight. That's perhaps a topic for another discussion, in terms of the recruitment or attractment process. And so that our objective was to uncover and reveal as much as we possibly could about the person that was showing an interest in becoming part of our organisation. So from the very initial first contact to us perhaps offering someone an opportunity to come and join the team could be a matter of weeks, certainly not a matter of days. But ultimately, if the decision was for them to come and join the team, then we gave them all the support and training that we possibly could. But ultimately, if they were an underperformer for whatever reason, we got rid of them quick and looked for someone who could come on to replace them to make a difference. So that was sort of fundamental rule number two. Rule number three, or if you like, that I adopted was that, we wanted to go from being good to being the best, which is, something we talk a lot about in the program and certainly perhaps has alignment with good to great by Jim Collins. But it was also about I wanted everything about what we did with people to get better. We wanted to have a better attractment process. We wanted to have a better recruitment process. We wanted to have a better induction process when people joined the team. We wanted to have a better coaching and performance management process. And we wanted to have a better review process, which was about giving individuals feedback about their performance and trying to help them identify career paths and opportunities. Such that, our people went from being good people to being the best people. And ultimately, we dug an awful lot of gravel over 10 years in order to uncover gold nuggets. And we certainly had a number of really high-performing people on the team, but it was an ongoing process. And I can without doubt say that the quality of the people that we had at the time when I sold the business and moved on was vastly, vastly superior to the quality of the people that were there when I first purchased the business 10 years previously. So those three rules, if you like, sort of underpinned everything that I approached. It was a bit like my underlying philosophy. And so that just helps to set the scene. So let's move on to reason number one. Reason number one is, I want you to come and you would either join our team or not join our team because you stood out. And sometimes people stand out for the wrong reasons, just as much as some individuals can stand out for the right reasons. I wanted someone who stood out because they were unique, that they had all of the other attributes that we were looking for, that they, that they approached the opportunity to become part of our team in a professional manner, and that were things about them that made us sort of stop and take notice of that individual for positive reasons, for reasons that made us say to ourselves, or the management team say to ourselves, there's something about this person that we really like. There's something about their character, something about their background, something about their skill set, something about their communication skills, something about the way they present themselves that just stood out and made us take notice. But equally so, sometimes there are people that stand out for all the wrong reasons. The people that used to send us stock standard CVs and covering letters that clearly had not been tailored for the position that they were applying for, and it were just mass produced on a photocopier, that had spelling mistakes in them, that were boring, right from the very outset they stood out for all of the wrong reasons. Or when they presented themselves, when they had to drop their CV off to us, they were unshaven and dressed in a singlet and shorts and jandals and showing a degree of lack of professionalism, all those little things. So individuals, we were watching all of the time and taking every single bit of interaction that we had and watching, and they stood out for the wrong reasons. So understanding that, you know, you want to make an impact, you want to stand out, you want to be different, but you want to be different in the right ways, and you want to be different in such a way that, you know, made you unique, it made you special. And so ultimately, that was the reason number one that we looked for, and was a huge contributor as to whether someone even received the opportunity to be considered to be part of our team at Pro Fitness, as my business was called, or alternatively were cast adrift before we'd even started any form of formal, you know, interview process with them. So that was reason number one: stand out, but stand out for the right reasons. Reason number two is that they communicated strongly. And communication, as you know, is the, you know, goes to the heart of what makes a successful personal trainer. You know, all of the technical skills that you learn are absolutely important, but it's your ability to communicate and build relationships with people that make you successful. And so we wanted people to come into our team in all of the different roles that had an ability to communicate, not only communicate externally with our customers and the people that helped us do what we did, our external customers, if you like, but also communicated strongly internally with all of the different parts of the team, because, you know, there's, you know, a team to be successful requires that sort of communication. So we looked very strongly for people who were great listeners. People who listened twice as much as they spoke. And they ask great questions. It was that combination of the listening and asking the questions that allowed us to connect with them and see that they were really good, you know, really good communicators. And, you know, they used the fundamental questions, the what, the why, the where, the how, the who, in order to help build that relationship. And not only build the relationship between us and them, but we could see that they had that their communication skills had been demonstrated in other things that they'd done in their life or in their prior careers or perhaps even in their schooling or in some of their external activities. And then we combined that with the verbal versus non-verbal. Who you are speaks so loudly, we cannot hear what you say. And I'll just say that again. Sometimes who you are speaks so loudly, we cannot hear what you say. And so we were looking for people who non-verbal communication was strong as well. Their facial expressions, their tonality, the way they moved, the way they appeared, the way they used posture and eye movement and hand movement and their face to enhance their communication. And often, you know, you look for those sort of things. It tells a story. So, you know, it's not just about what you say. It's about how you say it and the way in which you present yourself when you are saying it. And we look very, very strongly in that. And in our recruitment processes, again, which we're not going to cover off today, there were lots of little games and tasks and processes that we put candidates through to try and help reveal these sorts of things. Reveal, you know, are they really listeners? Are they good communicators? Do they ask good questions? You know, what happens to their communication when they're under pressure? What happens to their communication when they become very task focused and that sort of thing? So, you know, the second reason and closely aligned with the first is their ability to communicate. We wanted strong communicators because it was those communication skills that would help us to build a strong team. That was reason number two. Reason number three, you have to be qualified. And I don't particularly like that word qualified, but I use that in a qualified way. So I'm using the word qualified in a qualified way. And it's to bring in a whole spectrum of things. To join our team, you have to be qualified, obviously technically, for the role that you were going to fulfill. You know, if I was recruiting you, for example, to be part of our administration team and to work on our finances or on our memberships and managing the back end of their business, then you had to have some technical skills in that area. Conversely, if you were going to come and be a personal trainer, then you had to be qualified. You needed to know your anatomy and your physiology and your exercise science and your exercise prescription. Otherwise, you weren't going to be part of our team, because a professional business requires, you know, competently and appropriately qualified people to complete all of the roles. And yes, that was important, but it was very much a tick box type approach. The next part, but absolutely more importantly, that you have to be emotionally qualified. And when we talk about emotionally qualified, it sort of links into the difference between what we call IQ and EQ, your intelligence quotient versus your emotional intelligence and quotient. And obviously, it's our intellectual skills that allow us often, in many cases, to get the technical qualifications, to be able to, use the horsepower we have in our head in order to gain those qualifications. But it's the emotional intelligence that we have that allows us to apply those skills and deliver them to a client and to build relationships with people, to be empathetic, to be able to connect with people, to be able to work effectively within a team, to be able to understand that there's give and there's take, and it's emotional intelligence that allows someone to do that. And often people who aren't emotionally intelligent but highly intellectually intelligent aren't able to build those sort of relationships, don't have that level of empathy, can't work effectively within teams. But if I had to weigh up ever between two candidates and one was technically well qualified but perhaps not so emotionally in tune versus someone who wasn't as technically qualified versus having high emotional intelligence or high emotional qualifications, then I always lean to the emotional qualifications because that's the nature of our business. It's about people. So we need people in our business who could apply their skills and apply in such a way that would make a difference. So that was a very, very important part. And also, an element here is about research. It was always important to me that the people who wanted to become part of our team were qualified to be a part of our team because they'd done some research about us. They knew about who we were, what we did, the way we did it. And there was an awful lot of information in the public domain about Pro Fitness and who we were and what we did. And had they gone looking for it, that they would. So they were. What I'm talking about there is they were qualified to become part of our team because they'd shown an interest in what we do and how we do it and why we do it. And obviously then that allowed them when they came in contact with us to present themselves in the right manner, to be able to communicate with us in the right manner, to ask the right questions and to demonstrate, that they knew a little bit about what we did and why we did it and how we did it. And as I say, a lot of that information was just able to be obtained by basic research. So the third reason you have to be qualified technically, qualified emotionally, and able to combine those two skills in such a way that can allow you to be a great people person, to build relationships, to be empathetic, but ultimately also to work in a team for a common cause. Okay. So that was reason number three. Reason number four, we looked for life experience, and I love the old grumpy cat there. Life isn't like a box of chocolates. It's like a litter tray full of shit. And the truth is, that life has its ups and downs. Life, puts obstacles in our way and challenges in front of us to challenge us to see what we're made of. And I always wanted to look for people who could demonstrate some resilience, so people who could demonstrate that they had some life experience, that they'd been through a few knocks, that they've been through a few hardships and overcome a few difficulties, whatever they may have been, that they could demonstrate that they'd been able to, absorb the pain in the pursuit of the pleasure. And that they'd gone outside their comfort zone. And in some, positions that was difficult because we were recruiting, in some cases, relatively young individuals. So we didn't just necessarily look at life experience by the length of life and obviously the longer you've been around, chances are the more you've been exposed to. But, even as teenagers or even through school years, were we able to uncover or see demonstration where that overcome some adversity in their life? And often, and I say this with a high degree of tongue in cheek, but I would have often leaned more towards the public school person who had to struggle much harder financially in a family setting growing up than I would have leaned towards the private school individualhood. You had had everything handed to them on a platter. And I do say that with a degree of tongue in cheek, but what it does show is, as an individual who comes from a more difficult background, who comes from a less privileged background, who's pushed through, who's been a high achiever in terms of academically or in sporting, and that they've shown, you know, some resilience. They've shown a determination to overcome challenges that were part of their life just for no fault of their own or for no reason. And so at the end of the day, it's about looking for life experiences. That's trying to look into someone and see, does this, when the going gets tough, does this person get going, or does this person have a history of everything being too easy and has never really been tested? And then there's always that question in the back of the mind, when they are tested, you know, what will happen? So I always lent as much as I possibly could where it was able to be demonstrated for people that, you know, were able to point to that resilience, to point to having been able to absorb the pain at different stages in their life as they move towards their pleasure. So that's reason number four, life experience. Reason number five, there needed to be some evidence of achievement. Achievement, again, complicated depending on the age and the background of the individual, but, you know, achievement in their childhood and in pursuit of sporting or academic or cultural pursuits, in their early adulthood, in their careers, you know, were they able to show that achievement was important to them? Were they able to demonstrate that they were someone who was able to set goals and achieve those goals? Were they someone who demonstrated that they walked their talk? Or were they really someone who perhaps had enormous amount of potential and but yet had not really achieved anything of substance? And sometimes, you know, we achieve far more than we realize. And finding an individual who was able to connect with their achievement and articulate what they'd achieved and the hardships that they'd gone through to achieve that, or the difficulties they overcame, linked a little bit back into the prior reason, and it demonstrated resilience, and it demonstrated determination, and it demonstrated an ability to overcome adversity. And so, you know, achievement was important. And obviously, where possible, achievement in a career sense, and specifically some form of achievement in the role that they were applying for or in a very similar role. But where that wasn't possible, we wanted to see that there was a demonstrative achievement somewhere else so that we could draw a conclusion that this person, if given the opportunity to join our team and provided with the right support and the right goals and whatnot, will achieve, will make a difference and move our organisation forwards towards our overall business goals. So that's reason number five, evidence of achievement. Reason number six, they really, this busy little picture here have in front of us of you, but for those of you looking at the PowerPoints at the same time, they had to be a team player. Team player is a phrase that's used loosely and widely, but it was very important to us. You know, there was no I in team, and that's a bit cliche-ish, but it's very, very true. You know, and this picture tries to, you know, to identify that, you know, the ideal team player is someone who merges the skills of being hungry to grow, hungry to learn, hungry to progress, hungry to achieve results, with someone who's also humble, who's able to work within a team and understands that everyone is different and plays a different role, but by being humble and working together that you achieve more, but you're also smart. And sometimes that's not necessarily just smart academically, smart emotionally, streetwise, and it's those three things that when they're working in synergy, being hungry and humble and smart, you find the ideal team player. And so, you know, some of the things that we did in our recruitment processes and some of our questioning was around trying to identify those traits. Sometimes if they have some of those traits and not others, you know, they can become there's dangers in there. They can become say, for example, someone who's hungry can be a bit of a bulldozer potentially. And when someone who's hungry becomes a bulldozer, it can create challenges with those who are humble and those with those who are smart. Conversely, someone who's smart becomes a bit of a charmer and tries to, manipulate and take advantage and tries to play the politics. Conversely, someone who's very humble can be a bit of a doormat for others, the smart person and the hungry person to walk all over. So it's these combination of skills that you have that you want to work together, but in their best attributes rather than in their worst attributes. And ideally, then together you can find an ideal team player, but put together an ideal team. And we put, people through various exercises, games and team exercises. And it was fascinating to sit back and watch how someone played or how someone conducted themselves in that setting. But ultimately, you never got the opportunity to be on the team unless we saw a team player in you. And if you became part of our team and you weren't a team player, you wouldn't last very long. Not only would the team bring you into line, then ultimately, myself or Moana, who was the general manager of the gyms for me, she would have had to bring you into the line, and either you would become part of the team or ultimately you would be moved off the team. Because, it's like a little bit of cancer. A little bit of cancer grows into a big bit of cancer unless you deal with it. And so, having someone on the team who's not really a team player, who's a bulldozer or a negative influence or an undermining influence, can do an awful lot of damage to the team, so they need to be removed. So we looked for that. Sixth reason is we absolutely looked for someone who was a team player. Reason number seven was all about results versus potential. A little bit aligned to the achievement focus, they need to be able to point to results. It's all well and good being an achiever, but achieving at a level that showed that they were meaningful results, and a bit like Tom Cruise, shouting out in the picture there, "Show me the money." I needed to see that someone was able to achieve results and able to achieve results at a high level, particularly in certain key roles, particularly in the sales roles, particularly in the personal training roles, where we expected people to build successful businesses, thereby being successful themselves, but also allowing our personal training business to be successful and creating a profit stream in the business. Potential wasn't enough. And potential means nothing if you don't do anything with it. So we needed to be able to cipher out in the attract and recruitment process those people that showed an enormous amount of potential versus those who who produced results. Now, obviously, from time to time, we recruited people who had potential because they were relatively young and therefore weren't able to point to a high level of results. But there was an expectation that they would produce results, and if they produced results, they became an important part of the team. But if the potential didn't develop into results, that the potential just became that, then they would be moved off the team and moved off the team pretty quickly. The world is full of people with unfulfilled potential. Potential means nothing unless the potential is realized. And so that was reason number seven. And that one often became post-recruitment. It's something that we found out a lot more about after someone joined our team. And fortunately, more people produced results from the potential that they showed than didn't. But the reality is we did recruit people based on their potential, based on what they promised, based on all the other positive attributes they seen. But ultimately, when push came to shove, that potential didn't turn into results, and therefore they had to be moved because they were occupying the space of someone who would produce those results for us. And that's an important part of building a successful business. You have to be prepared to make those decisions. So that's reason number seven. So just to recap, reason number one is you need to stand out. You need to stand out for the right reasons. Reason number two is we look for people who could communicate strongly in all the different ways, and were able to ask great questions, who were great listeners, and could demonstrate that through their communication with us. that you were qualified. You were qualified technically, you were qualified emotionally, and you'd showed sufficient nous to be able to research our organisation to demonstrate it, that you really wanted to be part of it for the right reasons. That you could point to some life experience, you could point to some resilience, that you could point to, you know, times in your life where you'd moved from through pain to the pleasure, where you'd gone outside your comfort zone. You were able to evidence achievement. You were able to show us that you were someone who just didn't talk it, but you also walked it, and you're a can do rather than a can do and have done type of person, which is really important. That you're a team player, and that you're someone who can enhance our team and bring a set of skills to our team that will help the team collectively get better. That was reason number six. And finally, that you were someone who was able to put to turn potential into results, which was really important. Finally, and just a final thought, and it's one of my favourite quotes of all time, and it's John F. Kennedy, who sadly was assassinated. And the quote was, "Ask not what your country can do for you, ask what you can do for your country." And I've always thought about that since the very first time I heard it in the context of people. You know, someone who came to me wanting to be part of my team, who asked that question of me, would show a huge amount of insight into what's important to an employer. So ask not what I can do for you, ask what you can do for me. And so if you're able to take that approach into your career pursuits, into your recruitment of people to join your business as you move forward, then I think that's a really powerful message. Too many times it's about what I was going to do for someone else. How much was I going to pay them? How much opportunities here would I give them? How long would they have to spend in this role until they got into the next role? And not enough about what they would do for me. And clearly, you know, the more a team player or more that someone does for your organization, the more the organization will do for them. And so perhaps there's a really great message that can be taken out of John F. Kennedy's quote there, which was aimed at the entire population of America at the time, but bring it back down into our world in terms of our world of attracting people into our business and building a successful business. So hopefully that's given you a bit of an insight into, you know, the approach that I took to attracting people to our organisation, bringing people into the team and then moving off the team, the sort of things that I look for. And look, I made many, many mistakes in my at the time in terms of those decisions, but more right decisions than wrong decisions, and that approach allowed me to attract and retain some outstanding people who have gone on into other careers and still in the industry as well, achieving some great things. So thanks, guys, for participating in the last webinar of 2017. Very happy to answer any questions now if you've got them. Otherwise, have a fantastic Christmas. Be safe, and I'll look forward to chatting to you all again in 2018. Thanks, guys.